Well, look at this. A snake in the birdhouse.
Oh, yeah. Ladies, how are we?
Hello.
What's up?
So, I would like to begin this segment with something that we actually discussed on our show. I don't know if you guys have discussed this on your show. I haven't heard it yet, but it was basically...
What show is that, sir?
Oh, hello. This is Corby Davidson. I'm on the hard line from 3
hello,
to 7.
Oh, Corby.
That's very cool. Nice to meet you.
I know. It's great to meet
you
guys,
too. Good to see you.
Every day. Monday through Friday, at least, I'm on there. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. You should check it out. It's going to be great.
I do.
Matter of fact, a guy named Donovan Lewis joins us today at 4:15 for our weekly trifecta segment. So.
Okay.
Sure,
looking forward
you said
to
that.
I'll be there.
You damn right, you damn well. So we were talking about why these dudes, and you know, it's all Jerry based, that are in their 80s won't just stop. Like, it has nothing to do with like performance base for him. I'm just saying in general, what is he doing? Like, why didn't he just like say, I'm done and I'm going to go live my life out on my ranch and my boats and, you know, and whatever I want to do. And John says, Jerry is not unique. We have an entire generation of boomers who refuse to go home. Dolly Parton in a cowboy cheerleader uniform at halftime. The Stones, Willie, he says, I could go on and on. You get the idea. Same with politics. Trump, Biden, Pelosi, McConnell. The list is a mile long of 80-year-olds who just won't stop. Says Jerry is in a different genre of the same boomer gen that cannot hang it up.
That's an interesting thought, because I do wonder, will that stop with like our parents' generation? Because my dad retired really early and he's been chilling hard for a long time. My mom just got another little part-time job and she works maybe once every other week or something like that.
Yeah,
so that's no big deal. But I, in my mindset, if I'm working here when I'm 80,
well, I mean, anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
anywhere.
I feel like
I'm not going to do a
something
thing.
Something has gone. And look, I get it. Some people, you have to keep working. You just have
right.
to do it for financial reasons. But if you don't have to, and clearly these people that we mentioned don't have to, what is going on with that? Because I don't.
Is it like? Do you think it's the addiction to power?
It has to be, right?
Because it, like financially, that would not even move the needle for you, because you're richer than. That wouldn't even matter. You could walk away, own an island, do whatever. But you wouldn't have the power that you currently have some of these positions.
You could even just say, all right, I'm done working. I'm still going to own the team, but I don't have to go in and do this everyday stuff. And it feels like life would be a whole lot better. But everyone's different. You just never know what they need to fuel their lives. If they sit around and do nothing and they're not involved in everyday activity, maybe they'll just whittle away. You just never know.
I don't know.
What if he just rolled out like at training camp once a year and said hi to everyone? And we were like, oh, it's kind of like the mascot almost, but not working. Like,
what if he was really rowdy?
Man, that'd be amazing. It's got to be like a drug, like that level of power and constantly everywhere you go every day. If you even took a step back, you lose a little bit of that.
And maybe you think that you won't be relevant anymore.
Right.
And people will stop talking about you and stop thinking about you.
Maybe you're afraid that I'll die. Like, if I don't have this every day, I won't survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a death thing, for sure. But to have that type of ego where... My God, what if I'm not part of the conversation anymore? I've never, ever understood that.
Well, I think it's what Matt says. It's like a drug. It's
addiction. It's like, look at Nick Saban. Like, I don't want to coach college football anymore. He's got millions and millions of dollars. He didn't need to go do game day. It's like he still needed something to be able to, I have to be at the forefront. I have to be.
Oh, maybe it was just Miss Terry said, you're not going to stay here every
could
day.
Could be.
But
knows?
That the difference between that and what Jerry's doing, you look at other GMs and ask a GM in the NFL what their schedule is like on a day-to-day basis. It is so incredibly full-time. What Nick Saban is doing now is 4 months out of the year, probably 6 hours of work a week total. Like, he didn't have to do much.
Right.
You know, what he was doing before.
But in order to successfully run a franchise, that GM probably has to work 18, 19 hours a day.
Yes.
That's why this franchise isn't successful.
See, we're stuck in this weird abyss where
what it is.
He won't quit, but he won't right. work either.
Exactly.
Right? Like, he won't leave, but the job he's doing requires more work.
Yeah. Welcome to Dallas.
God, what a beatdown. From Diana, Corby, do you think it's possible that we, the fans, have any power to hit Jerry where it hurts? His ego. I don't think attendance at the games will ever waver. Man, that's the one thing. But can we stop paying attention to him? Stop making everything about this team, about him? She says, I'll hang up and listen.
Not in this town. Yeah, there's
the
no way.
The only thing that will get to him is when that stadium is half full.
Which will never happen.
Because it's such a spectacle that you'll see 25, 30,000 members of the other team there. Right. Like, it's never going to be empty. And that's just always money in the pockets.
Even if the Cowboys were, if it was 89 and they're on pace and they're going to go 1-16 this year, I think there's so many transplants that live in this area now that they would be more than happy to go over there and fill that stadium up.
To see them lose. That's the level that you're right now.
Especially teams like a Detroit that comes in here once every how often it is normally, or teams, you know, when they play the AFC and they rotate divisions and Baltimore hadn't been here in 8 years or whatever.
Dude, it's amazing, and I know you guys feel the same way, to think about the money that people spend on just a one-game experience out there. Like, if they take their family or whatever, how much money it costs now.
I know. My buddy Q, Corby, you know Q, he went to the game, sat 11 rows from the top, and said he probably put down like $225 or something like that a ticket. And that's one of the worst seats in the house.
And then you just sit there, you're basically watching TV the whole game because that... Just
watching
right
the screen, right. And then if you save all year to take your family to a game, and it's a good game like Detroit,
right.
And you're getting blown out at halftime, and somebody say, I don't want to see this, let's go. It's like, no, money as I spent.
$1,000 I just spent for parking, for everything.
Last down is played.
And I do wonder, honestly, if they sucked, and for whatever reason, fans like, oh, well, we're not going to go because they're not any good, would it really hit them, or is there enough events there throughout the year that fill that place up where it really wouldn't matter?
It wouldn't matter financially because, you know, the TV contracts are so big, it doesn't really matter. But there is a built-in profit margin that they expect every year. But you're probably right. With all the other events, it wouldn't really matter. I think just from an ego standpoint, if he saw that stadium look, instead of 93,000, there were 60,000. And it was a week to week, like the Commanders or Redskins, whichever era you want to call it, their fan base quit. They quit. They gave up. It got so bad. And I just don't know if that's here, if that's in the DNA here.
I don't think so.
I don't think it is either.
I just don't know at what level, because even if you announce, okay, we're going to strip this down, it's going to be one of those rebuilding years. I still think you'll have butts in seats.
I do too.
Because people will go out there and spend money to see the Cowboys fail. That's the level that they're on right now.
Think about how weird this is, though, because, you know, there was a time in the late 80s where right before he bought the team where it was nobody was showing up at the games. You know, Texas Stadium was half to two-thirds full. You know, my dad and all of his friends would have to drive out of town to go watch the game because of the blackout rules. I mean, it was really ridiculous, and that was based on they had gone to three NFC championship games like 3 years prior. Mm. Like, it fell off a cliff in an instant back then, and it didn't make any sense because the glory years were right there.
I don't even know if that would affect him, even if it's half full. Like, I get it, and that revenue is great, but he's stocked so much and he has so much money, he knows that it's going to turn a corner here real soon. And I just don't think so we're not going to go to a couple of games and we'll show you. And he's going to laugh because those seats are probably already sold anyway.
Yeah.
Because the season ticket holders are selling those tickets to people that are out of town. They already cashing those checks.
Yeah, we're all dying. Okay, we're all assuming that the Cotton Bowl is a preferred location for Texas and Oklahoma, but if it no longer could be played there, would you want it to be played at AT&T every year or be hosted by the respective schools?
I'd go home and home.
I'd go campus.
I'd go home and home.
I would too. And why are we so quick to say that? Like, it's such a cool weekend here.
I think being in smack dab where it is with the state fair surrounding it, there is nothing else in sport like that. There are, I mean, hell, you can go to Atlanta and they have neutral site kickoff games and all kinds of things throughout the year. There's other neutral site games. There is nothing like what they do for Texas.
Yeah, the way they split it, the way it looks on television, it's great. But if you want to get anything like that, then I would say that you go campus. Because they can seat a lot of people. These college stadiums are huge, and just the atmosphere would only rival the atmosphere at the Cotton Bowl if you go home and home.
I mean, it's not like it's some great atmosphere for the last decade plus with A&M Arkansas. Like, oh man, what a
It gets loud in there.
It gets loud, but I mean, like the whole just
everything that's included.
Right, not just being inside for the game, but the idea of the atmosphere of it.
Yeah, The A&M Arkansas game got old after like 4 years, and they were all ready to get rid of it, but they signed that stupid contract with you know who, and that goes back to the original point. There's so many things going on there that nothing can affect him. Nothing.
That's
except
true.
Death.
Okay.
And that wouldn't affect him because he wouldn't know about it.
Right.
Which ticket host, current or former, would have responded best to Jerry threatening to have them fired for asking questions? I can say, I honestly will say this, especially after what he said later yesterday, like the postscript quotes.
Right.
And I think that Jeff and Dan would agree with this, our bosses. That would be it. That's the last time Jerry Jones would ever be interviewed on our station. If he, what he said about those guys, in particular, those two guys, was so demeaning, was so gross, was so condescending, I'd be like, bro, I will never speak to him again if he said that about me. Never.
Yeah.
And I think everyone up here would have handled it, and I don't know what the correct handling of that situation is. Are you going to yell at him? Like, if you say, okay, who's the host that will probably yell back? Yeah, okay, that's one thing. But then what do you do? Do you just feed into it and just, you know, or just let him take the rope himself and just do damage to himself? And it's just different ways that you can handle a situation like that. And I just don't even know which way. Matt and I were talking about this.
Yeah.
Like, how would we have handled that? And I would have handled it one way, but you just never know when you're in that moment. Like, you could be shocked. Like, is this really happening?
Right. Right.
Like,
because
seriously?
It was shocking. Yes. I mean, like, literally, when you think about it, you know, you're just asking a generic softball question, and suddenly he's acting like that he's got control of your future. I don't know. I honestly don't know what I would do in the moment, but I can guarantee you what I would do in the aftermath. And that is say, that's it.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. I think in the moment, as defensive as he became, I tend to absorb that, and I feel like I would have been defensive as well. But then again, part of it, because we've all had these intense interviews.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there, okay, well, we're contractually obligated to have this person on the air. We're 3 minutes into it. I can't jump out of the segment yet. So then you're trying to also, okay, well, I'm pissed, and I'm trying to figure out a way to continue this conversation going because we got another 8-9 minutes to go.
Yeah.
I mean, all that comes into play.
It does. It really does. Yeah. Yeah. Just trying to see how you would be in that situation. So I can honestly say, I don't know. I can tell you one thing, and then when you're in the moment, you react a totally different way because it'll blindside you. And I bet you those guys were blindsided by what happened.
Yeah. 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 For sure.
All right, Snakey.
All right, Lady Man.
Thank you. Talk to you at 4:15.
Good stuff.
Okay.
That's the Birdhouse for this week. Thank you so much, P1s. Really appreciate it.